Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan DeBurka Butler is with us once again to bring us stories from other parts of the world. Afternoon, Jonathan.
How are you doing, Sean?
Right, China we're going to go to next. And this is a marital dispute, but involved car ramming.
Yes. Okay. That's a good headline there.
Things
all right,
went a bit too far there.
They did go a little bit too far, yeah. So this is in China. It's in the city of Zhuhai, which is a small city for China anyway. It only has about 2.5 million people in it. It's on the south coast in the province of Guangdong. And last Monday night, a man with the surname Fan took out his car and rammed into a bunch of people who were gathered outside a sports stadium, right? He's a 62-year-old man. He killed 35 people. And injured many more, as you can imagine. And so the reason for this was because he was reportedly angered over divorce settlement that obviously didn't go his way or that he wasn't happy with. And this has triggered authorities now to act because they're seeing a surge in what they're calling social revenge attacks by disgruntled members of the public, all right? So there was actually a report of another knife attack, I think, just shortly after this story broke, that happened late last week. And there seems to be an uptick in this, or at least this coverage of it is growing. So authorities are concerned. So now what they're doing in this particular province is that they're informing people, local militias and local neighbourhood committees, that they need to start keeping an eye on their neighbours, right? And they need to watch out for various different behaviours that might, you know, be telltale signs that something is going to go badly wrong, right?
Yeah. Now, in any other country, that'd be sinister, but not in China.
No, not at all. It's perfectly normal there. And it's something, I suppose, that they've been doing for a while. But this new security drive, okay, has actually got... It's categorizing people, right? This is a brilliant part of it. As the four no's and the five losses. Now, the four no's are no spouse, no children, no job, no assets. And the five losses are people who've experienced failed investments, frustration with life, that's everybody, relationship conflicts, mental health issues, or severe mental illness. So all you have to do is look out for people like that. And if you can find them, you need to talk to them, you need to mediate, or you need to suppress them through preemptive surveillance, whatever the hell that is.
Crikey. Mm. Now, the thing is that when these kind of things happen, and this is a big public event, and you know, people will have their phones out and that kind of stuff, is there an urge to kind of clamp down on filming these kinds of events as well?
There would be. I think it has obviously got out onto social media, but there would be, I think, amongst the authority, an urge to let anything like this out into the public, because they can't be seen to be losing control of what's going on. And the more of that there is, the more intervention you're going to get from the state. Now, you know, I did say that the actions taken by the authorities at this rate are confined to this particular state of Guangdong. But in Beijing, the Ministry of Public Security has started, you know, upping the propaganda around surveillance and why it's good to spy on your neighbour effectively.
Okay, but they're not. They seem to be reacting to this, these events happen because of a specific set of factors, rather than it might be some sort of more general societal problem, perhaps, that people are.
Well, that's what they're
desperate.
Trying to say, because they're to use a recent term, they're othering people, I suppose.
Yes.
So they're making it out to be, these people are not normal, so you people that are normal, go and spy on them. So it's a classic modus operandi, shall we say.
Right, South Africa, we're going to go to next, where there's a police blockade of a disused gold mine.
Yes.
Why? What's going on there?
Okay, so a bit of background, right? So this is, according to official estimates, South Africa has about 30% of the world's gold deposits, and it's very rich in other minerals. So it should be, by all accounts, doing quite well for itself. And as you know, gold is still obviously very valuable, but the price of mining it has gone up, right, between electricity and the fact that deposits are deeper down in mines. So for that reason, a lot of mines in recent years have had to close down, and people therefore are losing their jobs and losing their income. And an awful lot of these people come from places like Zimbabwe, Malawi, Mozambique, and they don't want to go back home. So what they do is they stay and they go back into these unused mines, right? And they effectively end up living there, right? They can go down into these mines for, you know, a week or 10 days at a time, come back up, get food, and go back down again. And the government reckons that it's losing millions of dollars worth of gold on the black market, and that gangs are getting in on the trade as well, okay? So what they've decided to do is clamp down on miners or ex-miners living in these mines, effectively. And I suppose one place has become the kind of poster boy for this police campaign. It's a place in Stilfontein, right, which is in the Northwest Province. A small population, only about 20,000 people there, mining community. And what the police have done, in short, is they've stopped people from going into the mine and arrested people who are coming out. Mm. Now, what that means is they can't get food or water down to the people who are there. So in their own words, they're basically trying to smoke them out. Okay?
Starve them out
is what they're saying. And so people who come up are immediately arrested. Now, over a thousand people have been arrested so far. However, last Saturday, a court in Pretoria ordered that the mine may not be blocked by any person or institution, whether government or private. So that means aid workers are now allowed to go in and out. The police have said, OK, we welcome the decision of the court and we'll go along with it, but we are sticking around. Anybody who comes out of that mine is going to be arrested. Mm. And if they're not supposed to be here, they'll be deported as well.
Yeah. And they're arrested for just trespassing in a mine or stealing gold or
that's a great question. Yeah. I assume all of the above, I would have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume the mine is closed down, so, but it's still probably private property still owned.
Yeah.
People shouldn't be trespassing. Selling gold on the black market, whatever it might be, not registered for tax. I'm sure they'll throw the book at them, all sorts of different things.
Yeah, and like, any idea how many people are living this way underground?
Well, they, if 1,000 have been arrested so far.
Crikey,
and there was another mine last week where 580 were arrested. So, like, you know, you're talking thousands of people, yeah.
Yeah, crikey. If there's a blockade on some of these mines, then the people living down there who clearly don't want to leave, things must get pretty desperate for them down there in order to survive.
So there's been a couple of bodies pulled from this mine.
Ah.
And there are reports that they were eating toothpaste to survive. So they've been down there for a month up until, you know, I last saw this story.
Yeah.
They'd been down there for a month, some of them, without coming up.
Right, Colombia, we're going to go to next, where they've outlawed child marriage.
Yeah,
I know, duh, but why is it taking them so long?
Yeah, well, there you go. This was the thing that stood out to me, because we've reported on numerous places where they've, you know, done away with child marriage. But I was just so surprised that Colombia still had it. And so this apparently was a loophole in the country's civil code, which allowed under 18s to be married with parental consent. Okay. So a couple of strands to this, right? So there's been a campaign going for the last 17 years, and it's been, the legislation has now been dubbed "They Are Girls, Not Wives." Okay. Now, it's been successful, but it's been rejected 8 times by Parliament. Okay, for various different reasons. Obviously, with any legislation, you're going to have opposition. But this has now finally passed, so it will be brought in. But it is one of 12 countries out of 33 in Latin America and the Caribbean to have entirely banned marriage under 18. So that means there's 21 that still have it.
Yeah.
That's the thing that really stood out to me. What's interesting here is, right, throw a couple of figures at you, right? Mm. So the opposition in the reports, okay, the opposition were sort of saying, okay, well, this is against our tradition and parental rights. And then there was some representatives of the 87 indigenous tribes.
Okay.
You might say to yourself, okay, fair enough, that's part of the culture and that's the way that it is. So it might take them a bit of time. However, If you look at the numbers, right, there's 4.5 million girls and women in Colombia who were married before the age of 18, which is a staggering amount. That's a quarter of the population. And the indigenous population is only about 1.5 million. So what I'm trying to point out there is that if you paint it as being, ah, sure, look, it's just the indigenous people who are doing this, so they're grand and we'll talk to them and we'll sort it out. But it's clearly not.
Yes.
If you read the numbers, there's plenty of whatever, white people doing it as well, or plenty of pockets of the country where this is very common. So I just thought it was a very interesting story because I was so surprised that it actually existed in Colombia.
And given that high figure that you just shared there, is it linked to anything else? Is it linked perhaps to socioeconomic conditions?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there is, and you'd find this everywhere, really, around the world, that, you know, you'd have a male who might be older and wealthier, and then a family who, you know, effectively sell their daughter off for marriage and will be looked after. But it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah, and of course, then if they get married, they're, if they're being educated, that's the end of that. And
they're
having children, etc.
Yeah, and all opportunities are out the window. So it's a bit of good news, I suppose. But as I said, very surprised that it was there in the first place.
Yeah, right. India, we're going to go to next, where the Supreme Court there has ended a bulldozer justice. Now, that's not a metaphor. That's literally an activity involving bulldozers.
Yeah, so I suppose when did this whole thing start? Like anything in India, it involves the BJP, the ruling party there under Narendra Modi. In this particular case, it involves the minister of the northern state of Uttar Pradesh, who came to power in 2017. His name was Yogi Adityanath. And Yogi Adityanath, when he came to power, he said to the police, we've got terrible problems with crime here. That's what I was voted in on. So I'm going to give you as much power as you need to sort this crime out. And they said, fantastic, okay? So initially, they went after crime bosses and their ill-gotten gains, and they would go in and Criminal Assets Bureau, the equivalent.
Yeah.
And in this case, they'd go in and they'd bulldoze their house. They'd basically say, you never had planning permission there. Built illegally, we're going to knock your house down, okay? And so fair enough, everybody was happy with that. The problem came about when the problems between Hindus and Muslim minorities in these states began to take fire. Okay, there's been a lot of that in recent years. And what happened was, you could be a person who was accused of stealing an apple and your house would be knocked down. Okay, so it was justice that was meted out by the police. And so obviously Muslims felt that they were being targeted here, so they campaigned for years to get the courts to have a look at it. And finally, the Supreme Court last week has basically said that authorities must not demolish any property simply because its owner has been accused of a crime. They specifically said that such high-handed and arbitrary actions have no place in a constitutional democracy and would be dealt with through the heavy hand of the law. You've got to love the rulings in India. They're always so dramatic. But that's what they've said. And it's a very positive move. It has been welcomed. What about the people whose houses are already gone?
Yes.
There's about 750,000 of them. 150,000 homes were demolished by various different state governments in India over the last number of years. So what's going to happen to them? Nothing has been said about them, about redress so far. So we really don't know.
Yeah. Presumably they'd be entitled to compensation. Were the initial actions anyway just bulldozing somebody's house? There wasn't any kind of legal statute enabling that.
So the legal statute enabling it was that you shouldn't have built your house there.
Yeah.
That was the premise.
Yeah.
But the premise was not built on anything solid.
Yes.
If I can use
a building metaphor.
Okay. So as I said, you'd be pinged for, you'd be arrested for stealing an apple, and they say, you're a criminal. We're going to take your house down.
Mm.
So the two of them weren't related at all.
Yes.
But they just felt, the police felt that they had free, or some police, not all police, obviously, felt that they had free rein to bulldoze houses. And it just happened to be, since you can hint of sarcasm there, that it was Muslims who had been involved in riots. Well, not riots, but protests. But
any
and
sort
like.
Of activism.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed. Well, we shall see. Right. Germany, we're going to go to next. And a museum has reached a deal there over a painting.
Yeah, interesting story, which unsurprisingly goes all the way back to the Second World War. It involves a Jewish family, the Vandenberg family, okay? Very sad story. In 1940, Jaap and Ellen Vandenberg sold this painting called Le Repos, okay, which is Girl Lying on a Grass, by Camille Pissarro. And they had to do that in order to get money to escape, right? They went to somewhere in the Netherlands and they were in a safe house there. Now, unfortunately, the parents survived, but their two daughters, who were brought to a separate safe house, they died in Auschwitz, right? As I said, the father managed to survive, and he put in a claim for this painting in about 1946, 1947, right? He said he was forced to sell the painting to procure currency to survive.
Yeah.
Now, nothing was ever done about that claim because nobody knew where the painting was until 9 years ago, when a group of Dutch restitution researchers found the legal claim that he had written and traced it back to this museum in Bremen, in the Kunsthalle Bremen. They said, okay, we know who the legal owners are or should be of this painting. You have it. You need to come up with some sort of a deal here. Now, normally this would go to court and there'd be lots of money for lawyers and not so much money for the people who should be getting it. But in this case, they went to mediation and we don't know, but the descendants got an undisclosed figure for the painting. And there was a proviso put in that the museum would have to write and publish a book detailing the history of the painting and the family that used to own it and how they lost it.
Yeah.
So that was the deal that was done. And it was launched, I believe, last week at a museum in the Netherlands where the painting is on show at the moment.
OK. And does that book outline how this museum came into possession of this painting? Did they buy it directly?
That's a great question. I do not know. I have to say that is a very good question. I don't know the answer to that, how they came to that painting.
Yeah.
But that, very good question. No,
and it's a painting by, it's a Pissarro
painting. Yeah, Camille Pissarro. Yeah, he died in 1903, I think. He would have been one of the impressionists.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
You know. One of those guys.
Yeah. One of those guys. Right. Okay. So what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Okay. So tomorrow, the president of Brazil, Lula and Xi Jinping meet in Brasilia. Wednesday, 50 years ago, would you believe, since the Birmingham pub bombings.
My word.
50 years ago tomorrow. And then on Sunday, there are presidential elections in Romania, as well as presidential elections in Uruguay as well.
Okay, thanks a million, Jonathan. As
thanks,
ever, Jonathan de Burka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.